Welcome to a special edition of Defending the Kingdom. Tonight, we're going to talk about a lot because the number one team in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs, will play the number one team in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles. Sound familiar? Well, that's what happened back in February in Super Bowl 57. Also on this edition of Defending the Kingdom, we'll check into history here, because this game coming up is very historic, and it's only fitting that we do it at a historic location. If you ever come to Kansas City, come to GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium for a game, you must come to Tom's Town, right? It is the location. Fantastic food and drink that you will enjoy. Unique, but it's named after Boss Tom Pendergast. If you study the history of Kansas City, Boss Tom, interesting dude in the 20s and the early 1930s as the mayor of Kansas City and pretty much ran the whole town. But we're at Tom's Town tonight. A reminder that Defending the Kingdom is brought to you by Ticketmaster. They are your new best friend as we have some awesome home games coming up, starting with the Philadelphia Eagles. Oh, the Buffalo Bills are coming to town. Oh, the Cincinnati Bengals are coming to town, and the Raiders are coming to town. So check it out at Ticketmaster. Mahomes retreating. Pressure on the outside. Dumps it. McKinnon at the 15-10. McKinnon the Jet. 5. Touchdown! Kansas City! The Jet has flown all the way across the Atlantic. And we are now here at Tom's Town. Mitch Holt is with you, the voice of the Chiefs, along with the senior team reporter himself, Matt McMullen. And on this episode, a bunch of initials to throw at you. STS for Salute to Service. PTC for Parent Teachers Conference. This is our Defending the Kingdom Parent Teachers Conference after the first 9 weeks of the season. And lastly, SBR, Super Bowl rematch. It's the Chiefs and the Eagles. But Matt, before we do all of that, we're at Tom's Town.
Yeah.
You and I love Kansas City history. Feel like Boss Tom's sitting here with us.
Well, how cool is this? We have a live audience, I think, for the first time ever on Defending the Kingdom. This is super cool. Normally, this is Mitch and I just in the studio. There's like three people. Now we have all of you here today. So this is a lot of fun. And this should be an awesome episode. We have been on a bit of a hiatus. Our last episode was on the ship on the River Main in Frankfurt. It feels like forever ago. But now here we are 2 weeks later, and what better way to come off the bye than a Super Bowl rematch on Monday Night Football?
It's our Salute to Service game on Monday Night Football against the Eagles. That's why Matt and I, of those of you who are watching this episode of Defending the Kingdom, see us in our Salute to Service gear. But we're so proud. And really, the Chiefs were the leading franchise in doing this, in that setting aside one of our games each year. Now the NFL has adopted it to make sure that we give respect to our military. And some of the most important military installations in the world are right here in the Chiefs' kingdom, honestly, within about 2 hours of where we sat doing the show at Tom's Town. When you think about Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, folks there, it's the engineering center. It's the chemical weapons center, along with a whole lot more. And you've been to Whiteman Air Force Base where the B-2 bomber is, and you just don't walk in there and go, hey, where's the B-2 bomber?
I got in the cockpit. I couldn't take any photos, though. That's prohibited because it's secret. But I did go in it. It's pretty
cool.
How
crazy was it?
It was the coolest thing ever. I was in the cockpit of a B-2 bomber.
And you got to cross the red line, which meant...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Could have taken off.
Very few people get to cross the red line. You don't want to cross the red line if you're not cleared to cross the red line at Whiteman Air Force Base. Just saying.
Yeah.
Fort Leavenworth in Kansas is the home of the Command General Staff College. It's been said it's the West Point of West Point. If you're going to be, yep, if you're going to be, and maybe any, let's throw it in here, veterans that are a live audience or folks that have trained there, if you're going to be a full bird colonel or a general in our armed services, you go to Leavenworth. It's required. And the cool thing is, being around Fort Leavenworth for a long time, is our allies also train there. And what was awesome was in Germany to see the German flag and the national anthem of Germany and America, the United States, happen at the same time. And the German military were around the German flag. And I'm guessing if I walked around, many of them have trained. at a military installation in the States.
Well, I think it's fitting that our salute to service game is right after we get back from Germany, because the American influence military-wise in Germany is profound. And I had a chance to go over there in May as part of like a pre-marketing trip, and part of it was meeting with German fans talking about football, but part of it also was meeting with our military members abroad. Ramstein Air Base is near there. It's the largest military installation outside of the States in the world for a U.S. military base. It's like 50,000 U.S. citizens are there. It's like a whole American community. And the coolest thing is we went to the BX on site, which is kind of like a shopping mall for military members, and it was out the door with people in red trying to meet Dante Hall, who I was there with, and some cheerleaders. It was the coolest thing. We're over in Germany, and here's Chiefs Kingdom right in the middle of it all. So it's so cool, the connection between Chiefs Kingdom and the military, and we celebrate it here. Celebrate it every single week, but particularly this week.
You'll see a lot of German members of the German Air Force actually train at Rosecrans, which is the Air National Guard post in St. Joseph, home of our training camp. They train on the C-130. So if you go to one of the hotels and you come to training camp, you might be eating breakfast with one of the German trainees there. Fort Riley in Kansas is home of the 1st Infantry Division, one of the most decorated and most powerful divisions in the world. And they're right there at Fort Riley, Kansas. Amazing. And many times they're first to go if they're called upon. A lot of brave women and men have been there, and we've been in there on post as well. And then don't leave the Air Force here. Oh, let's say off at Air Force Base in Omaha, home of the U.S. Strategic Command, kind of a deal. On 9/11, when President Bush was in a bunker trying to figure out what to do, he was at Offutt Air Force Base. The only plane in the sky at the time. Just tells you about Offutt, all right? McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita is important. Then there's the different guard groups, the Coast Guard Pay Center that pays. If you're in the Coast Guard, you get paid from the center in Topeka, Kansas. I mean, it's just all around us, and it's so awesome, and we're going to salute all of that during the game against the Eagles.
Yeah, absolutely. Just once again, the NFL obviously has a huge platform. So many people care about NFL football, and it's a great opportunity to honor and recognize those that make all of this possible, because without them, we wouldn't be talking about football here at Tomstown tonight. So we thank everyone in our armed forces for everything that you do.
For sure. Now, we here, it was awesome when we were in Germany. So many came up and were Kingdom defenders.
Yeah, it was crazy.
They watch and listen to the podcast, Defending the Kingdom. Gosh, I'm trying to think. People came up from Wiesbaden and Baden-Baden and Hamburg, Stuttgart.
Munich.
They're like, Munich. They're like, hey, it's you guys. Wow, okay. So it was cool to engage them. But one thing we do, we got a lot of rookies here from Defending the Kingdom. Now that we've got you in the fold, you are an official Kingdom defender here at Tomstown. But one thing we do in every episode is we jump into a satellite. Matt drives it, and we go around the Earth. Because we've had every continent represented but Antarctica, right?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully someone from Antarctica eventually reaches out.
Yeah.
No one yet.
So if you know a friend in Antarctica that's a Chiefs fan, just we'll mention him right here on Defending the Kingdom. What do you have around the world tonight?
So the way this works is people write in where they're from, where they're listening from, and we give them shout-outs. So I have five today, as always. These are all people I met in Germany. So I met Valerie and Jeff while walking around Frankfurt. I was with my mom because my parents came over. We're just walking around Frankfurt. Like, what are we doing? We're just on a European vacation before the Chiefs game. Valerie and Jeff live in Kansas City, huge Chiefs fans. They came up and said hi. Shout out to them. I met Bruno in Frankfurt. He's a German who's a Chiefs fan, loves Defending the Kingdom. So shout out to Bruno. I met Steven outside the stadium in Frankfurt. So the stadium where the Chiefs played is 100 years old. It's very old, and it wasn't built to have like a press box and suites and all that. So if you want to get around the stadium, you have to leave the stadium and walk around. So you're surrounded by people at all times. Like, imagine for like a home game here, if you had to leave the stadium and go in the parking lot to go to like the upper concourse. That's what it was like. And we could talk about our setup on the radio booth later, because that was something else.
But yeah, something else. That's the way to describe it.
But long story short, I was walking around the outside of the stadium quite a bit, and I met Steven. He told me he flew in from Australia for the game. He's a huge Chiefs fan, flew into Frankfurt from Australia because it was more convenient than coming to the United States. Amazing. I met Jeremy from Kansas City, met him outside the stadium as well. And then I met Keaton from Des Moines. I met him on the concourse while I was looking for a pretzel on the concourse. They didn't take cash, only cards, so I wasn't able to do that. But I met Keaton from Des Moines, flew all the way to Frankfurt for the game and saw a huge Chiefs victory. That's what I got for today.
So you came back like me with euros burning in your pocket.
Sure did, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, had those
for next
euros.
Time.
Still do, have some of them. Well, it was just an incredible trip. Now, we didn't mention Doss, our German waitress.
She loved you.
Well, at the restaurant that your parents found, okay, it was in a 500-year-old building, and the restaurant was, I don't know, maybe 100 years old. It's just this awesome German pub with great schnitzel.
Yeah.
That schnitzel was so good. I don't know if Tomstown has schnitzel. See if you guys can. And then they also had libations, but when she came up and put down a libation, beer, and said it was the sweet nectar of the end zone, I'm like, what? But somebody, there were Chiefs fans all over Frankfurt, so they'd kind of set her up.
She didn't speak great English, but after that she came up to Mitch, and she's like, touchdown in Kansas City, yeah? And it's like, where are we, you know? Like, we're like in an alternate universe. I remember walking around the main...
Prost.
Yeah, exactly. I remember walking around the main square in Frankfurt, and they had like an NFL experience kind of thing that you would see at training camp or the Super Bowl or anything like that. And there's this guy with the thickest German accent going, who is the biggest Kansas City Chiefs fan out here? And it's like... I feel like, you know, where are we? Like, this is crazy. Like, growing up a Chiefs fan, never thought I'd be in Frankfurt, Germany, and there's people everywhere wearing red rooting for the Chiefs. It was just a super cool experience. I knew it would be awesome, but I was blown away by it, truly. So it was really cool. And you have a fan now, that waitress at that bar.
Das the waitress. So, now, Prost, you know, tschüss. So it was fun. And got the win, by the way, 21-14 over the Miami Dolphins.
A gigantic win.
So that put the Chiefs in the number one position in the AFC. We're in the pole position now going into the next 8 weeks. And then on our bye week, we watched as, everybody that we needed to lose lost on walk-off field goals. It was crazy. You and I were texting back and forth. It was like, oh, my gosh, they lost. So it was good. It just kind of furthered our pole position.
The irony of what Mitch and I do is we love football, and we ironically don't watch a lot of football because we're just watching the Chiefs games, and we're there, and we're doing all that stuff, and we don't really see what else happens in the league until after the fact. So whenever we have like a bye week and the Chiefs had won, so we're feeling really good, and we have an afternoon of just watching football all day, and for all of that to happen, like, it was the perfect weekend in so many ways. For the Ravens, who are 7-2 coming into Sunday to lose, now we, no matter what, will have the fewest losses in the AFC going into week 11. Just an incredible circumstance. Yeah. The Bengals lose. They're 5-4 now. The Bills lose last night. They're now 5-5 fighting for their playoff lives. Just a huge weekend for the Chiefs. And the Chargers lose as well. So the Chiefs have a 3-game lead in the AFC West in the loss column going into week 11. It's looking pretty good right now. Still a lot of work to do, but they're in a great spot going into the second half of the season.
Suffice it to say, it was a good weekend for the Chiefs Kingdom. Just saying. But after 9 weeks, now how many, we got a live audience here, how many had parent-teachers conference as a kid? Maybe some of your educators. Any educators in here that have been on the other side of the table? You know what?
There we go.
My son's a teacher. He has to do it every 9 weeks, right? They sit down and go through it. Did you have a parent-teacher conference?
I sure did, yeah.
How'd that go?
I think well, as far as I know.
Better than the U's that I had or the minuses. Like, what is he doing in here?
I was very solidly a B-plus student.
Yeah.
So it got me here at least. That's why I'm talking about football and not building rockets or something.
I wasn't until I got Mr. Rogge in geometry. And he was just a little kind of out there, and I didn't understand it. And I was off the rails in geometry, and I don't know. Parent-teachers conference didn't go well then.
Well, so it worked out okay for you, I think.
Well, some would argue, but... So we're going to have our own parent-teachers conference here, right, with the Kansas City Chiefs. So let's say the Chiefs are sitting down in front of us because Matt and I, in our own nerdy style here, did a deep dive into us, which is what our coaches do. They basically use the bye week. They get some time, decompress some, but Andy, I don't know if Andy decompresses at all, but they do a self-scout. They basically put everything under the radar to say, what's working, what's not, how do we get better, how do we improve on the things we're doing well. And so what Matt and I thought we would do on this episode of Defending the Kingdom is get our opinion of doing that thing. In all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, of kind of what we like, what's been going right, and then where can we improve? Because we're going to come up with some stuff numerically that will get you excited about the next 8 weeks of the season. Because this is your teacher sitting down with you and your parents and going, okay, he's doing or she's doing okay here, but we see real potential, right, in the next 9 weeks. Kim Hobbs heard that in Plattsburgh. We think Kim's got real potential. So we've got some potential here. But let's start with the offense and what you liked in the first 9 weeks of the season, because it's been a much-discussed group around the National Football League.
Yeah, I would start with an overall point. And the good news for the Chiefs' offense is they've shown that they can move the football, right? Now, the scoring isn't as high as it normally is, but they can move the football, and I'll prove it here with some numbers. It's the number 8 total offense in the NFL in terms of total yards. It's the 5th most passing yards in the NFL. It's the number 4 third down offense, the fewest 3 and outs in the NFL, and the fewest sacks allowed. Now, I'll kind of combine it with what can they do better. It's consistency. So the good news is they're moving the football. We've all seen that. We know they can move the football. They can just be more consistent, right, and not have the self-inflicted mistakes. So 17 turnovers this year, 2 red zone turnovers, critical drops in big moments, penalties. That's not Chiefs football. The good news is they're 7-2. They've overcome all of that to be 7-2, and it's a lot easier to build on that kind of stuff, to improve on your mistakes and to correct things when you're winning. Teams right now that are going through issues and losing, it's a lot harder. The Chiefs are 7-2 in a great spot, and they've shown potential offensively. Just a matter of finishing drives with touchdowns, not turnovers and penalties. If they weren't moving the ball at all, if they were just going 3 and out and punting every other drive, that's concerning because you don't know if that's fixable at this point in the year. The Chiefs can move the ball. They've shown that consistently. It's just a matter of finishing drives with touchdowns. That's why I'm encouraged by the Chiefs' offense.
Yeah, I'll add one positive that I think can easily be overlooked about this team so far. They are number 1 in the NFL in yards after contact yards. And it's by far almost 1,500 yards after initial contact. In this day and age of the National Football League, the way defenses are playing, not just the Chiefs, but they're playing really throughout the league, they're not going to let you have the big home run pass. If it happens, it's more of an exception than in the early days of Patrick Mahomes of 18, 19, 20, and 21. So it's imperative that a player might catch the ball at 8 to 10 yards, but then run for 18 more. That's how you get your chunk play. So for the Chiefs, they're number 1 in the NFL in yards after contact, which bodes well because you and I both see it only growing. Guy like Rashee Rice, the rookie out of SMU, powerful to catch the ball at 8 to 12 yards. More targets for a Jerick McKinnon. We know Kelce invented this stat, basically, but a guy like Noah Gray. There's more yards after contact coming. And if you're a team that wants to be successful in the next 60 days in this league, you better have a team that can get yards after contact.
And Rashee Rice, like you mentioned, is a great example of that. He's going to be awesome on this team. He's already helping us win games. If you look at Pro Football Focus metrics, which take it with a grain of salt, it's all subjective in the end, but right now they have him as the number 2 rookie wide receiver in the NFL, behind only Puka Nacua on the Rams. Number 2 in the NFL, and we got him in the second round. Nearly 400 yards receiving for him this year and 4 touchdowns. Only Jordan Addison on the Vikings and Tank Dell on the Texans have more receiving touchdowns this year among rookies than Rashee Rice. And keep in mind, against the Bears, he was tackled at the 1 yard line twice. He almost has 6 touchdowns on the year. So I'm super excited about him. A couple things with him. His feel for space is really impressive. We saw that in week 1 against the Lions. It really wasn't the route that was drawn up, but he realized where the space in the zone was, got open, caught a touchdown. Very impressive from a rookie. And like you said, running through contact against the Chargers a couple weeks ago, running over whoever the safety was, that was awesome. We love seeing that. And his catch against the Dolphins a couple weeks ago on third down that really got the 95-yard drive going wasn't a big play. It was like a 6-yard catch on 3rd and 5. Those are the hidden plays that make a rookie season really special. And we're seeing that from Rashee.
And Kadarius Toney gave us a taste of it in the game in Germany. He caught a pass at about 8 yards and made an 18-yard gain. That has to happen the way defenses are playing now in the National Football League for any team. Now, in the areas of this is when I sat down with, like, does your son really understand the Pythagorean theorem? No, he does not. Like, but he's got potential, I think. So just some few things here to think about, because if there's just moderate improvement, you will see a drastic increase in productivity in the offense. For example, we lead the league with 60 penalties accepted against us. Of those 60 penalties, 13 are offensive holding penalties. Those are 10-yard penalties. And part of the consistency that Matt is referencing is we'll get a drive going, up, it's a hold, so now you're behind the chains, is the football vernacular, where you're 2nd and 12 instead of being 2nd and 2. So if you clean that up just a bit, just 50%, keep in mind 100 yards equals 7 points. Of our 60 accepted penalties, when you want to nerd this out and look at it, it's not just the amount of penalties, it's the amount of penalty yards. So we have 500 yards in penalties in 9 weeks. That equals 35 points. So if you just get half of those back in the next 8 weeks, just hand our team 18 points and let us sprinkle it around. And we're 7-2 and number one in the AFC going into that. See my point? I'll get you fired up here. The drops, people have talked about it. We have 18 drops, okay? That is tied for the most in the league. Now, if you take our average passing play, which is 10.7 yards, do the math. That's 192 yards. Uh-oh, there's another 14 points we can put on the fire. Or half of it, just take 7 if you want to be realistic. But the fact that compared to Philadelphia, which only has 5 drops so far this year and we have 18, you know that's going to get cleaned up. And so that's another area where offensively we can improve. When you do the numbers, though, and you do some analytics and nerd out, you're going, I could see where the second half could be really fun.
And it's interesting because a lot of the things that have hurt the Chiefs offensively in the first half, things like penalties and turnovers and drops, are kind of random variables. Like, those things will swing up and down. Like, it's not going to continue all year because that's just how the math works out. And like you said, if the Chiefs are 7-2, despite those issues offensively early in the season, if those things go in the Chiefs' direction just a little bit, all of a sudden the offense goes from scoring 23 points a game to 28 points a game. And if you look at around the league, offense is down across the board. The Chiefs are still the number 13 scoring offense in the NFL right now, despite not being really themselves. If they can figure it out just a little bit with the way the defense is playing, and we'll talk about them here in a minute, this team is going to be very tough to beat.
Yeah, and if you, again, kind of want to work on this and nerd it out, because we have folks here from Colorado State University. They flew in for the show.
Go Rams. My father-in-law is a Ram.
So,
I love it.
Fort Collins, Colorado, yeah. One of the great spots on earth. And we also have a guy that flew in from Morgantown, West Virginia, just for the show. Just to be here at Tomstown. That's pretty
Go
crazy.
Go Mountaineers, right?
Yeah, have you been to Morgantown? Okay, got to fly into Pittsburgh and drive. But anyway, once you get there, it's fun to get there. Now, you want to nerd out on this over the next 8 weeks? Keep track of what the Chiefs do on first down on offense. Right now, the Chiefs are 25th in the league out of 32 teams with the average yards to go on second down. Some of that's the penalties. Some of it is not being crisp enough on first down. If you just tighten the screws a little bit, all of a sudden you see where the numbers can go crazy good. So have some fun. Track first down productivity, starting with this Eagles game on both sides of the ball. We'll get to the Eagles in a second. But you can see where this team has a lot of improvement, and maybe we'll get a B or an A in geometry over the next 9 weeks. Let's get into the defense, because they now are the child at the parent-teacher's conference where you're going, well, they normally get – what, they're getting an A? They're getting an A. It would be my parents going, he's getting an A in math? What happened to him? That's where the defense is.
Well, what's the most basic stat to track defense? There's so many complicated numbers out there, like EPA and all this adjusted stuff.
And what's the most important stat?
Is points. And the Chiefs have allowed the fewest offensive points in the NFL. And we're going into Week 11. They've allowed 134 points going into Week 11.
Just think about that.
The fewest.
It's the best in 30 years for this franchise.
It's unbelievable. They've been incredible. They are the only team in the NFL to allow no more than 24 points in all of their games this season. No more than 24 points in the NFL. And we're almost to Thanksgiving, and they haven't allowed more than 24 points this year. They've allowed just 24 plays of 20 or more yards this season. That's fewest in the NFL. And they just played the Dolphins, who had easily the most of any team in the NFL. They held Miami to 2 plays of 20 or more yards, by far the lowest the Dolphins have had all year. And how about just big plays in critical moments, right? It's not just like empty stats with the Chiefs defense. I mean, big stops against the Jaguars, against the Vikings, against the Chargers, against the Dolphins, like I mentioned. Just really great plays. That Brian Cook fumble recovery for a touchdown, I've still watched it 100 times. I'm not sure how it happened. But to make plays like that against the Miami Dolphins in a huge game is just awesome.
Then you look at the fact that the Chiefs are tied for third in the league with 31 sacks. Baltimore and Buffalo are the only two teams ahead of them. Think about that in context. Right now, if you're talking about the best defenses in the NFL at the first 9 weeks, you are looking at, or 10 weeks with our bye, you're looking at, Baltimore, expected. You're looking at, Buffalo, kind of expected. You're looking at San Francisco for sure, and the Chiefs, unexpected.
And a big reason why is the performance of the Chiefs' second-year defenders. Mm. So many players in the Chiefs' defense last year were rookies, and they played really well, but what we talked about all summer was, can they take the next step and make this defense truly a top-five defense in the NFL? And we've seen that. I mean, look at George Karlaftis this year. 44 pressures. That's 11th in the NFL. Already matched his sack total from all of last season. He has 6 sacks this year. That leads the team. He had 6 sacks all of last year. So impressive stuff from George. Trent McDuffie has been a superstar this season. Again, if you look at Pro Football Focus numbers, he is the number 8 cornerback in the NFL, and he leads the NFL in forced fumbles with 4. And he's also going to have an interception this weekend against the Eagles. And then Leo Chanel.
We've been calling it every week, by the way.
It's going to happen this week.
Every week. He's this close. He's this close. I'll go berserk when it happens.
And Leo Chanel, we don't talk about Leo a lot, but he has 3 sacks and 9 pressures on 31 pass rushing snaps. That means on a third of his pass rushing snaps this year, he's gotten pressure on the quarterback, and he has 3 sacks. So Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Brian Cook all made plays as well. So the young defenders on the Chiefs defense, the guys that were rookies last year and helped this team win a Super Bowl, have all taken a collective huge step this year. It's a big reason why this defense is right now the best defense in the NFL.
And yet, in the total thought of parent-teachers conferences, okay, Mitchie's getting an A, but he can improve in certain areas. The defense can improve in certain areas and change things around even for the offense. I'll let you touch on the red zone, but where I'm going to go is field position and forcing 3-and-outs. They've only forced 21 3-and-outs so far this season. It will be paramount against the Eagles of just getting 1 or 2 of those. Because if you do, think of the field in a computer-generated field, and you're following the field with maybe like a colored bar graph. Let's say for Monday night's game, red or green. The Chiefs, in the early days of Andy Reid, the first 6 or 7 years, through defense and special teams, would create opportunities because they would make that field shift red. Right now, this defense, to take the next step, will get other offenses off the field with more regularity and give the offense the football more opportunities. In fact, we only 4 teams have fewer offensive series than we do. So it's not just getting the ball. It's like how often you get it. Well, if the defense can give the ball to your offense more often and say, here, Patrick, go for it, and then try to improve on all those statistics we gave you 5 minutes ago, you'll see how the defense now can have a even bigger impact than they have already.
And one other way to do that is taking the ball away. That's one area the defense can improve. Just 13 takeaways this year. Hasn't mattered a whole lot because they've been so stout otherwise. Now, I'll preface with this. It's kind of ironic because a lot of times defenses, their numbers are buoyed by like great red zone numbers or a lot of takeaways. The Eagles were kind of like that last year. We'll talk about this later, but the Eagles at this point last year had 20 takeaways, by far the most in the NFL. That's not sustainable, and they're not doing that this year. The Eagles have just 11 this year at this point. A defense that has a ton of takeaways or is really, really good in the red zone, it kind of makes you think that's kind of fool's gold. That's not sustainable. That defense might not be as good as they are. The Chiefs' defense, in terms of red zone efficiency, is kind of middle of the pack. Same with turnovers. So that tells you it is sustainable because they've been really good in all the areas that really matter. Now, we know they're good. If they can be a bit better in the red zone and take the football away a little bit more, that's really exciting because as good as they've been, if they flip the field a little bit or get the ball back to Patrick Mahomes a little bit more often, the defense is even scarier. One more thing I'd be interested to see from this defense is the progression of Felix Anudike Uzama, the first-rounder out of K-State. So I kind of compare him to George Karlaftis because last year George didn't do a whole lot in the early part of the season but came on really strong late. He had like 6 games in a row where he had a sack, and including in the AFC Championship game. Felix right now is only playing around 20% of the snaps, but as we go here, as guys maybe need a break more often, get some fresh legs incorporated in our pass rush, it's going to be an opportunity for Felix to get in there and show what he can do. And he doesn't need 6 sacks, but if he can have like 2 or 3 sacks or a couple big plays and big moments, that'll be big for his progression moving forward. So that's one other thing I'm looking forward to in the second half of the season.
Interesting point, because one of the great assets of our defense is we can mix and match. Let's just take the defensive front. With Chris Jones can play inside and outside. Karlaftis can play outside and inside. Mike Dana has been the most underrated guy in this entire football team when you look at the year he's having. Charles Omenihu, they can play inside and outside. So when you play inside, you have to be willing to play the run and not just go chase a sack. Felix fits that. he came in. It's one of the reasons they drafted him. So his demeanor is the same as a Karloftis or as a Dana or as a Chris Jones or as a Menahou. So it's not like you have to train him to do that. He can be there. It's just a matter of him having fresh legs, colder weather, coming into play. Again, to show you just you don't have to do a whole lot here just to see how, oh, my goodness, we could make a big rush here and push in the second half of the season. We're going to throw special teams in on this, right? This is like your extracurricular activities in the parent-teacher conference. But the valedictorian of this group is Harrison Butker. We are not talking enough about Harrison Butker. It's you getting an A-plus and your teacher's looking at you and going, okay, maybe he can trim his beard a little better. Oh, no, it's perfectly trimmed. Oh, my gosh, he's 18 out of 18 on field goals. I'm not sure it's even been close to the upright. When yeah. I call these, it's down the middle, down the middle. The only dude that's better is this Brandon Aubrey guy, who's a soccer guy, who actually played for FC Dallas, I think, and he's 19 out of 19. Other than that, Bucker's just hitting everything, and his kickoffs have been outstanding. I mean, part of the reason, big reason we're 7-2 is Harrison Butker.
He's also 22 of 22 on extra points. And nothing's more deflating than like when the Chiefs score and then they miss the extra point and it's like, ah, I'm still excited, but ah, it stinks. He's 22 of 22 on extra points. So he has not missed a kick all year long. Knock on wood. We joke around about this. It's like telling the guy that has the no-hitter in the eighth inning, like, hey, man, you have a no-hitter.
Yeah, so don't tell
him.
Homer.
Yeah, we try not to tell him that he's been perfect on the year. Obviously, he knows it. But when you have a kicker who can be truly automatic like he's been, just what a weapon, really, from any distance, no matter the circumstances, no matter the weather. He's been amazing all year long. Let's just keep it going.
It's awesome. Yep. So where can special teams improve? Wait a minute. Okay, we can improve here. Those penalties that I mentioned, 7 have been on special teams. 3 have been holds. Those are brutal because they are half the distance penalties, usually, meaning you start, now you're giving Patrick the ball at the 7, the 6, or the 5, instead of having the ball at the 25 or the 30. If you do the numbers on the probability charts of that, it's crazy how the numbers go up and your chance to score. So that needs to be better. Our 3 holds on special teams, only Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Carolina have more. If you look at field position, we're 22nd in the league in average starting field position. So, again, if you just kind of grind it a bit and you get to 15 or 14 or 13, and now we get the ball at the 32 instead of the 9, it can make a giant difference.
Little things like that make a big difference in the NFL. And there's been a few mental mistakes inside the 5 this season fielding punts. Like, you can't field the punt, like the 1-yard line, right? That's stuff that is fixable and the guys can work on because it's, like you said, difficult starting a drive from the 2 versus the 25. But little things like that are fixable. And when we're picking nits like this on the special teams unit, it shows that things are going pretty well overall.
Again, we want to just give a shout-out to Tomstown, which is our locale tonight. Those of you who are listening on the podcast, you hear all of that ambient sound. Those are crazies enjoying what Tomstown can provide, which is liquid encouragement. Some of the most amazing cocktails in the Chiefs Kingdom. It's what I'm telling. A lot of folks that watch or listen to the podcast go, can't wait to come there. What do we do? Come to Tomstown. That's got to be a bucket list for you. And have a little something. And then study how interesting Tom Pendergast was. Okay. He was an interesting guy. And his headquarters was like right across the street. But this is a refurbished place. It's just awesome. One of my favorite places in the city to enjoy an evening. So, again, here at Tomstown, parent-teachers conference is over. You've brought the apple to the teacher. I brought a caramel apple, trying to think, you know, maybe get a B in geometry. We'll see. But now we turn to the matter at hand, and that is the third acronym that we have here, which is SBR, which is Super Bowl Rematch. It is interesting that into this far into the season, the teams that played in the Super Bowl have the best records in the AFC and NFC respectively, and here they'll meet on Monday Night Football at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. There is so many elements to this game that we'll just kind of crop dust it tonight. But what a Monday night game is coming up with the Chiefs and Eagles.
It's unbelievable. I mean, to have a Super Bowl rematch on Monday Night Football, both teams are coming off a bye and going to be ready for this game. Both teams are relatively healthy. I'm glad it's at home. The environment's going to be incredible. And one of my favorite narratives around this game is Coach Reed, if he wins on Monday night, will become the winningest head coach in Chiefs history. Most wins in Chiefs history. He's already the Eagles' all-time leader in wins as a head coach. And if he wins on Monday, he will be the first head coach in NFL history to be the all-time wins leader for multiple franchises. And he could do it against the Eagles. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can't make this stuff up. It's amazing. Hopefully he gets it done. But Coach Reed, how lucky are we to have him? Of course, laid an incredible culture and foundation in Philadelphia. I know they still really love him there. But I'm glad he's in Kansas City now.
And let's take this just one step further because there's poetry here. This is symmetry, as you just heard. And Matt, you laid it out. But I'm going back to October of 2021. You and I went to Lincoln Financial Field. It was the Chiefs against the Eagles. If Andy Reid won that game, it would be his 100th win as the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. He would become the first head coach in NFL history to win 100 games with two separate franchises. He did it against the Eagles. And now,
what are the odds? I mean, it's crazy.
He could do this against the Eagles. We don't play him that often. It's so cool and symmetric and poetic and awesome.
It's unbelievable.
Ted Lasso's writers couldn't make this up. Seriously. They couldn't make this up.
And, you know, looking at one of the things I feel good about going into this game, this is like the most well-known stat in Chiefs Kingdom. Everyone knows this. But Coach Reed's 21-3 following a bye in his career. Nobody's better after a bye in his career because he has extra time to work on the opponent. We joke around about this. Coach Reed doesn't really relax or go on vacation. He just thinks about football all the time. And he's been thinking about this matchup here for 2 weeks.
And he does his own parent-teachers conference. That's the other thing. Not only does he prepare for the opponent, he does as good a self-scout. I think it's really fascinating to watch because he just goes around his desk, right? He'll be the teacher and go, Andy, what do you think you can improve upon? Then he comes around and then he's the student. No, I'm just teasing. But he might do it if you gave him that idea. But he is phenomenal when he has a chance to kind of self-examine and then really dig into an opponent. It's why he's been so good against the division, 39-6 since 2016, because he has a chance to do that all year long. He knows he's going to play our division, so he spends all that time working on our division in April and May and June and July. And so now he's had some time to get on to work on this Eagles team, and he'll need to. This is a very complete team. In fact, you could argue that the Eagles right now, here in mid-November, are the most complete team in the National Football League.
And let's start with their offense. So we all watched them in the Super Bowl. We have an idea of what they like to do, but their offense is really interesting. So it's the number three scoring offense in the NFL. They're averaging 28 points per game. Number one third down offense. But the thing with them is ball control. They're not like the Dolphins who want to have four plays and score a touchdown. They're kind of the anti-Dolphins in a lot of ways, but it still works for them. So they have the most scoring drives of 10 or more plays in the NFL this year with 21. They have the second longest average time of possession in the NFL at 33 minutes and 26 seconds. Their average scoring drive, where they score a touchdown, takes 9 plays and at least 4 minutes. They limit the chances that you can score offensively. They keep the ball away from you. They've faced the fewest offensive possessions of any team in the NFL this year with 91. So they play ball control. They play keep away, and they finish their drives with touchdowns. And it's very difficult to beat a team that's doing that. Now, what have teams that have given them trouble done, like the Jets, for example, get them out of their rhythm? Make Jalen Hurts turn the football over. Make them go three and out. All of a sudden, the game isn't played on their terms. They want to play the game on their terms all night long, where they possess the ball. They're the one getting 4 yards a play, 5 yards a play. Not a lot of big plays with these guys, but they play ball control. The Chiefs have to get them out of their rhythm because that's how they beat you.
And to take this another step further, that you put it out there, let me just – anybody seen the movie Step Brothers, which is like a classic movie of our time? It's so awesome when Will Ferrell can get in and mess up John C. Reilly's drum set.
Uh-huh.
That's the image I got when you said you got to throw them off rhythm. We need to chip their drumstick, right?
Yeah.
So you go in there, it's like, were you messing with my drums? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So we were let's mess with Jalen Hurts' drums.
Uh-huh.
But to your point, seriously here, they are the most efficient team in the NFL. It's their terms. Okay, you're going to play the Eagles. Here's the terms. Here's how you're going to play it. Here's how you're going to do it. And the Jets got them off the grid. The efficiency of the Eagles on offense, they've had 93 drives. They have had 56 advancements per game. That's the best in the league by far. Of their 93 drives, 45 have resulted in scores, including 27 touchdowns. By far, the best in the league. Not only are they keeping it away from you so you can't have the ball, while they're holding the ball from you, oh, they're going to figure out a way to go down and score. So what happens? They get the lead. Now they're on script. John C. Riley's playing the drums. For the Chiefs, we got to have a little Will Ferrell in us, okay? If you can get them off rhythm, get them off script, we saw it in the Super Bowl. When they get off script, they don't like it much.
And what's interesting is we had kind of a similar narrative when we talked about the Dolphins game, but their rhythm and their script is much different. It's all lightning quick. It's the first read, zip, get the ball out. Tua Tagovailoa 2 weeks ago had the fastest average time to throw of any quarterback in the NFL. Very hard to defend that kind of player. The Chiefs found a way. Jalen Hurts is different. Jalen Hurts holds on to the football almost a full second longer than Tua does. Now, a second doesn't seem like a lot, but in football, it truly is. His average time to throw is 3.14 seconds. That's the third longest average time to throw in the NFL. It's a great opportunity for our pass rush, which has the third most sacks in the NFL this year, to wreak some havoc, to mess with that rhythm, and I'm confident they can do it.
They're also the best on fourth down conversions. They have 13 of them. Nobody's even close to that. And Hurts can run the ball. He has 33 rushing touchdowns. That's the most by any quarterback in Eagles history. Now think about that list and the runners. Oh, Michael Vick, Randall Cunningham. Hurts has been the best of all of them. And you know what? And they're 25-2 in their last 27 regular season games. That's pretty good. All right, that's what's coming in to take us. But I was really impressed with Jalen Hurts last year at the 101. Kim was there. He got the NFC Player of the Year. Now, would I have the year before want to go to Cincinnati to their AFC Championship? And they're like, hey, we want to give you an award. You know what? I'll pass. Jalen Hurts showed so much class in coming here and seeing all of us celebrate the Super Bowl championship over him and his team. He's impressive. He's an impressive dude, and it's hard to not root for him, but I'm not going to root for him on Monday night. But he is a leader. He's tough. He can run. He can throw. He's a good quarterback.
Not to get off track, but you mentioned the 101s. 4 years ago now, Kyle Shanahan came to the 101s only about a month after the Chiefs had beaten the Niners in the Super Bowl, and we had like meet and greets like before the 101s officially began, and it was my job to moderate the Q&A with Kyle Shanahan, just
How'd
Chiefs
that
fans.
Go?
You know, he was actually really great. He
did
handled
he give
it really
you a
flat
billed hat though? I hope he,
he
gave
didn't.
You a
I wish he did. No, but he handled it really well. But that was a difficult assignment. I'm with you though. Jalen Hurts is I respect the heck out of him. You learn a lot about players after in their darkest moments, and after he lost the Super Bowl, he handled it really well. Like how he talked to the press, talked about how he would respond and how he would come out of that situation. And we've seen that this year. I mean, the Eagles are the only team in the NFL to have a better record than the Chiefs. They've been great. But now, once again, opportunity to beat Jalen and to claim the best record in the NFL for Kansas City.
My nerds from Fort Collins, my Colorado State Rams, who are on our research team now for defending the kingdom. Now you're hooked. You're going to have to watch or listen to every podcast. Do this. Keep track of Philadelphia's first-round efficiency in this game. They must have it offensively. They want to play on their terms so they can do the tush push, right? Do the brotherly shove. But in the first quarter, they've outscored opponents 65-17. They get ahead, our terms. John C. Riley playing the drums. They're also 56-31 in the first quarter, 65-17 in the third. Those quarters, keep track of that because, again, to try to get them off script, it starts with the very second and the first breath of this game.
And it's doable. You talk about the Eagles and you watch the performance in the Super Bowl, you'd think they're like top five in every offensive category. They're not. I mean, the Eagles are 12th in red zone efficiency, 11th in plays of 20 or more yards. The Chiefs actually have more runs of 10 or more yards than Philadelphia does. The Chiefs have 27 of those. Philadelphia has 21. And they're minus two in turnover differential. So these guys are not perfect. They're very efficient, and when they're playing their game, they're very difficult to beat. But teams have found ways to get them off their script. The Jets did it the best, and it'll be up to the Chiefs on Monday to hopefully force a turnover or two, create negative plays on first down. Then all of a sudden, the efficiency of that offense can't really do what it does so well.
They're the best in defense in the league, only allowed 12 10-plus runs. They're the best in the league and only allowing 66 rushing yards a game. But keep in mind, playing on their terms, they work ahead. Teams throw more. They don't run as much. So that stat can be somewhat convoluted. And this is to your point. playing on their terms. They are second in the league in opponent time of possession. You just don't get the ball from them. So that's where you play complementary football to try to get it back. And special teams comes into play. They have 5 20-plus punt returns. That's the most in the league. Don't let them get out the gate. Get field position. First down. Tush, push. Hobbity-hobbity. You don't get the ball, and then they go score. Now it's on their terms. So you can see getting them off the grid is big on this Monday night game.
And that's why it's important for the Chiefs offense, which has turned the ball over more this year than we're accustomed to. You can't turn the ball over against these guys because they play such great ball control offense. When you have the football, because you're probably not going to have a lot of possessions in this game, you got to score. And if you don't score, you have to at least flip the field. And the Chiefs did a great job of that at times against Miami. That opening drive was a thing of beauty. I mean, just surgical, right? The 95-yard drive later in the game was perfect. If they can execute those kinds of drives against this Philadelphia offense, keeps the pressure on Philadelphia throughout the game, and the game isn't on their terms. But again, just can't turn the ball over. And that's one thing, like I mentioned earlier, that Philadelphia was so good at last year. This point last year, they had 20 takeaways, most in the NFL. Very difficult to beat the Eagles if they're forcing that many takeaways, right? They only have 11 takeaways right now. The Chiefs have more than they do. They're middle of the pack. I think they're like 16th in the NFL. Can't turn the ball over against these guys. Unfortunately, they're not forcing a lot of turnovers at the moment.
And for these gals having their girls' night out, just think of the Step Brothers movie and trying to mess up the drum set, all right? Just mess up the drum set. So it is about STS, Salute to Service. It is about PTC, Parent Teachers Conferences, and it's also about SBR, Super Bowl rematch. Now we're going to open it up for questions. Something that's a first in the history of defending the kingdom is questions from our live audience here at Tomstown. And so no question about Tom Pendergast and his tax, paying taxes. Or
Lucy has a microphone. So if you have a question, just raise your hand and Lucy will run the microphone over to you.
Or what political opponent may be buried inside of the old Kansas City Power and Light building.
Could you talk about the concept of the ugly win and how that ultimately affects your schedule at the end of the year?
Terrific question, because we've had some ugly wins. We had ugly wins last year. In the 11 years with Andy Reid, we've had a plethora of ugly wins. In this day and age in the National Football League, you better win over half your games ugly fashion, meaning it's not necessarily going to meet your fantasy league requirements. You're not going to get Mahomes to always throw for 350 yards and 4 touchdown passes, but you're going to get him to grind out some 4-minute drive at the end to preserve a victory. What beauty's in the eyes of the beholder, sometimes ugly wins can be gorgeous, particularly the way we've been able to win and close out games defensively like we did against the Miami Dolphins. So the ugly win is it doesn't look real pretty statistically, but it's the old first Rocky movie that you can remember where Adrian, I don't know what she's looking like early, but at the end of the movie, hey, right? That's the ugly win.
But Rocky lost.
Yeah, but she came back looking even better in Rocky too. And what happened? What happened when she goes, hey, come here. Like Rocky goes, I won't mix it up with Creed no more. And she goes, what did she say? Win. And the bell goes, dong, dong. And he goes and wins Rocky 2, 3, 4, and 5. I don't know. So your thoughts on the ugly win versus the beautiful win.
I'd add that the Jets game earlier this year was one of my favorite games of the season. And it's funny because if you look at just the box score, not a great game for the Chiefs for a lot of reasons. But the way the Chiefs ended that game offensively when it's 3rd and 23 – and Mahomes scrambles for 25 yards. It's 3rd and 8, and he scrambles for 9 yards to end the game, and he's standing like this with all of New York looking at him. That's why he's the MVP of the NFL. The stats are awesome, and the numbers are great, but to be that player in that moment, even though things weren't going well, says a lot about the character of your team, and that's why ugly wins are almost a good thing, because I think if you blow everybody out the entire season, we saw this with the Bills back in 2021, I think. You're blowing all these teams out. You feel really good about it. You have all the style points. But when you're finally challenged in the end, you don't have that experience. The Chiefs have that experience, and they've won those moments. And to the second part of your question, the tiebreakers at the end of the year are so important. I mean, the Chiefs scored 19 points against the Jags. That doesn't matter if at the end of the season, the Chiefs and the Jags have the same record and the Chiefs get the home game because the Jags lost to the Chiefs 19-14 or whatever it was way back in week two. Doesn't matter how you win in the NFL. Just win because it's really hard.
For the gals here, we could give you a choice. You can go out with either John C. Reilly, as I mentioned earlier, or Matthew McConaughey, right? You may have a lot better time with John C. Reilly because he's a really funny dude. You'll be laughing all night long. Any other questions?
Parent-teacher conference, you both are the teachers. What surprises you the most coming into this halftime part with the Chiefs offensively being in the top third, but going into last year losing Tyreek, we led the NFL in just about every metric. So where we are now, or the Chiefs having one of the best defenses in the NFL, what's the biggest surprise?
Well, I'd say the biggest surprise, I wouldn't say the I would go with the defense, but I wouldn't say it's a surprise because I think we saw the potential, but you still have to do it, right? And I think to see that potential turn into a practical top five defense in the NFL has been super, super exciting because we've been talking about the players that we have here for so long. This has been building for years, like drafting Nick Bolton, drafting Willie Gay, and also getting the rewards of the Tyreek trade. You get Trent McDuffie. We don't get Trent McDuffie without trading Tyreek. You probably don't get Brian Cook without trading Tyreek. And for those players to make big-time plays and big-time moments and to keep getting better, I think is not a surprise once again, but maybe one of the most exciting parts of the season so far for me.
In poetry, that they were the two of the three main culprits to get the ball from Tyreek yeah. and they get the play that decided the game.
Yeah.
I love poetry. And Ted Lasso couldn't have written, or writers couldn't have written that script either. To me, it is the fact that, and I'm going to do a minute with Mitch. I do another feature. I'm going to do this the Patriots week. The fact that we have now emulated the Patriots in their 20-year run, and here's why. In that 20-year run, the constant was Tom Brady, we know. But they figure out about 10 to 12 different ways to win during that 20 years. It wasn't always Rob Gronkowski, and, oh, there were times they had Randy Moss, or there's time they lived off field position and defense. They just figured out a way to win. And for the Kansas City Chiefs, what's most exciting about what's going on is we have the best quarterback in the National Football League, but we're now writing a really good cookbook on different ways to win other than just throwing jet, chip, wasp. Make sense? And we're now – so my thesis, you're getting the trailer here. If you can't beat them, join them. And once you join them, you beat them. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. It's over here. Lucy, by the way, Loyola, Chicago, Rambler.
So who's our sleeper for the rest of the year? Whose jersey are we going to be buying in January?
Oh, what a great question.
You go first. That's a hard one.
Oh, it is hard. I got a lot of I'm thinking of a lot of thoughts here. Trent McDuffie. You'll buy his jersey. He's going to get an interception, and once he gets one, he's going to get him in bunches. You would hire him. You would work for him. You would want your child to marry him. He is an amazing cat. And I'll just say this about our whole team. This is only my 30th year of being the voice of the Chiefs. We have an amazing group of humans on this team. If you have a chance to archive, because I'll have them on each week during the Chiefs Kingdom show, and we'll spend a little bit of time on football, but mostly we dive into what makes them click. The stories and the emotional and mental maturity of these guys is uncommon, and McDuffie is a great example of that. So I'm going to go with Trent McDuffie. You won a 22 jersey at Christmas.
I'll say someone who we talked about earlier who's already showing what he can do. It's Rashee Rice. And I think Rashee has been really impressive through the first nine games of the year. Like I said earlier, almost 400 yards receiving, four touchdowns, almost six touchdowns. He's been really good. But he's shown us things that I don't know if we would normally expect from a rookie wide receiver in Coach Reed's offense. He has a chance to really take off here in the second half of the season because the Chiefs are finding out how to use him effectively. And, I mean, he's, what, like 22 years old? And to already kind of establish himself as one of the go-to guys for Patrick is super exciting because it takes two to tango. You need Patrick Mahomes to trust you, and he clearly trusts Rashee Rice, and Rashee is making him making big plays routinely. So I'm really excited for his future. I think the second half of the year, he's going to really take off.
I'm going to mention just an ancillary thought here, too, because one of the things that Matt and I talk about, and I say it all the time, any level of football, any level, high school, middle school, college, your favorite team, you find me a good team with a bad offensive line, it'll be the first team. You cannot have a good football team without a good offensive line. We take these guys for granted. We're number one in the league in fewest sacks allowed. And Trey Smith, you would same thing with McDuffie. You'd work for him. You'd hire him. Creed Humphrey, same. Joe Tooney, quieter, but he's a three-time Super Bowl champion. I mean, he's an amazing cat. And we have really, I think, underestimated the progress that Jawan Taylor has made at right tackle and Donovan Smith at left tackle since the beginning of the year in that game against the Lions.
And I'd add, like Patrick would be the first to say this, it's difficult to block for Patrick Mahomes. He hangs on to the ball. He runs all over the place. It's part of what makes him so great, but it makes being an offensive lineman very difficult. It's a bit simpler to block for Tom Brady, who's just going to stand there, you know? But for our offensive line to be as good as they are, to have the fewest sacks allowed in the NFL, while blocking for Patrick Mahomes, who's a unique player back there at quarterback, is a testament to them.
And get to know him. Get to know Trey Smith. It'll blow you away. He's such a good dude. Amazing guy.
And got him in the sixth round. It's crazy.
He'll be CEO of a company, though, someday. He's that bright. Girls' night out. This is going to be a good one. Oh, yeah. They've been partying here since noon.
All right. So I'm a big K-State fan.
Ema. Yeah.
And so my spouse.
Colorado anyway, State, you're with us in this.
So I'm really hoping Felix can turn the corner. What do you think he needs to do to get that done?
Matt, I'll let you start.
It's opportunities, I think. It's just opportunities. So the Chiefs were fortunate where they have a rotation of defensive linemen where they don't need Felix to come in and be like a 10-sack guy right away. I mean, they have guys like Charles Omenihue, George Karloftis, Mike Dana, really good players who are starting for this team. And like I said earlier, Felix has only played 20% of the snaps. But as the season goes on, we're going to need him. And he's going to have opportunities. And it's what does he do with those opportunities? And like I said earlier about George, George really made the most of those. I mean, 6 sacks to close out the year. Let's see what Felix can do. But Felix is an NFL pro-ready player. He's not like a project kind of player. He's someone who can play. Just a matter of getting opportunities. And I think he'll get him later this year.
And I would add to that, his season is only starting now. We forget that on the last play of the Sugar Bowl against Alabama, he broke his hand. So the last play, which meant that his progress was impeded during rookie minicamp. In fact, he didn't participate in our OTAs in the summertime, which Andy Reid, while everybody else is flying kites and throwing frisbees and stuff, Andy Reid is emphasizing getting ready for the season in June. And then Felix was a slow goer in training camp. They did not give him as many reps. So I would tell you, here we are mid-November, and the engine is just getting revved up. Now, you being a K-State fan saw what happens when he gets revved up. Go watch his TCU game from the 2021 season. He wrecked the whole thing. He wrecked the whole game. I mean, he had 6 sacks in the game. They only gave him 4, which was they redid it. But, I mean, he looked like the late Derek Thomas. And so he's got that in him, but then he fits right in with these other dudes that are in that room with him. It's a unique group that's unselfish. They've got to do the dirty work. It's not just getting sacks. I've got to play the run. In this game, I've got to win on first down against the Eagles. They understand that and know that. And Derek Nottie's probably the second most underrated guy on this team, past Mike Dana. But the fact that they're willing to go inside and outside to be unselfish, I'll do my work so Matt can get the sack. But I'm unselfish enough knowing that if I do that, I might be in a parade in February. That's our guy. That's the way they're wired.
And still, what a cool story Felix is that there was 18 players invited to the draft from all over the country. Felix was not one of them, but just like went to the draft as a fan. And he's the final pick of the first round with all the circumstance and all the craziness going on. It was so cool. He's an awesome guy. Obviously, we've had a chance to get to know him. His time is coming. Just a matter of opportunities.
We have a draft fest every year. We introduce usually our first-round draft pick the day after they're selected or the 2 days after. And we're always sweating it out like we're flying them in from, who knows where. And we're like, No, not with Felix. He's 20 minutes away.
Like mom drops him off.
Yeah, mom dropped him off at school. Like he beat us there. He was it's like, okay, yeah, Felix is at least Summit. But a great dude. He's another guy to get to know. You'd hire him, you'd work for him, same thing with these guys. Unique bunch of dudes. Thanks to all of you. For sure, thanks to Tomstown. It's great to have Morgantown and Fort Collins here tonight. I think Matt would join me. If you have some out-of-town guests and you invite him to a game or, hey, let's do something Kansas City-ish, this is a place to come to because it's historic, it's fun, and it's great food and other stuff. So, anyway, he's Matt McMullen, senior team reporter. I'm Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs. Thank you for joining us on this special episode of Defending the Kingdom.